This is Where Did the Road Go? Our aim is to explore the fringe, to be true skeptics and question openly, to investigate the paranormal, bring light to the dark corners of history, and give a voice to the shunned of science. We deal in mystery and the important questions that these subjects bring to light. What is reality? Who are we? And why are we here? Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com for a full show archive, links to all our social media, upcoming schedule, and much, much more. Now, join your host Soraya on this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
Welcome to the final show of the second year of Where Did the Road Go? Tonight we'll be talking with Micah Hanks and Jim Harold about the use of skepticism in the paranormal and its rather important value, I feel anyway. A couple of things to get to first, though. One, we have a new website design. And my thanks to John Tudor of Deprogrammed Radio for helping me out, as he did quite a bit to help me out getting this set up and working properly. So no longer will the show archive be on Blogger, or the blog beyond Blogger. Everything is hosted on wheredidtheroadgo.com now. You can cross-reference things, and everything is tagged and searchable, and I think it makes for a much better site. I will be adding an event section in. The section's there. There's one event in it at the moment, which is the Paradigm Symposium I put in just to make sure everything worked right. I'll be filling that out, as well as the links section, and possibly a video section as well. That being said, check out the new site. If you have any problems or any comments, please send them along. There's no chat room yet. Tonight's show is pre-recorded, so you're not going to be able to log in and ask questions live anyway. So hopefully the next week, the chat room will be added in, or something similar to allow you to ask questions during live interviews. The second thing I want to mention is I will be a part of something that the Ghost Hunters of the Finger Lakes and Lorna Reynolds will be doing. And that is called Beyond the Realm. And it's February 28th at the Ramada Inn here in Ithaca. And there's a whole bunch of different stuff going on. And I will be part of a roundtable discussion from 5 to 7, which is, I'm assuming, on ghost hunting. I haven't gotten all the information yet. But there's definitely some interesting stuff there. There's some past life regression work and some other speakers, a pranic healer, an acupuncturist, and some other stuff. So we'll have more information as that gets closer. And so that's that. So now on to the interview. Conducted this a few nights ago with Micah and Jim. And I hope you enjoy it. Here we go. All right, so here on the last show of year two, I have with me Micah Hanks and Jim Harold.
Hey!
How are you guys?
He's Jim. I am doing excellent, 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 and excited to be here with my partner in the paranormal, Mr. Hanks.
I'm Micah.
You're Micah?
Yeah, he's Jim. I'm Micah, yeah.
Okay. Are you sure? You're not Michael?
No. Although I do get that from time to time.
Oh, good. And before we get started, let's for anyone who doesn't know, you two do a show together already. You want to tell us a little about that?
You just said doo-doo.
Some people would say the show's doo-doo, but we don't think that.
Jim, but, that's right. Beauty before age, Jim. Wait, hold on. That's not
Well, age before. Well, anyway, I'll spit it out. Paranormal Report has predominantly over the years been a video podcast where we take a look at strange videos and photos that may or may not be paranormal, and we talk about whether we think they are or not. And actually, you catch us, Soraya, at a very opportune moment, because there is an evolution in the show. We've kind of bifurcated the show on the same feed. We now are doing, just starting this week, a 30-minute audio podcast where we pontificate on these subjects and discuss them and go back and forth. And we're supplementing it with shorter videos, so the video lovers get their video, but people who want to hear us opine on different topics can do so while they're doing other things. That's the beauty of radio shows and audio podcasts. So we hope we're bringing it together for everybody. Do you think that covers it, Micah?
Well, yeah, and I just want to say that, you know, it's immediately apparent the influence that guys like Jim and I have on one another, because Jim and I, not as in the constellation, but Jim and me, we have a certain camaraderie, and I love it because, you know, I'm known for being pretty wordy at times, but I just noticed in the last 35 seconds, Jim said bifurcate, pontificate, and opine. Wow. So I guess I am
You're rubbing off.
Yeah.
All right, and you each do your own thing as well. Jim, you have the campfire tales, and
I've got
podcast.
Yeah, today this is my 10th year. This will be my 10th year in podcasting, starting in 2005 with the Paranormal Podcast, followed up with Jim Harold's Campfire, and then a few years back I introduced a whole those are free podcasts, introduced a whole slew of paid podcasts on my Plus Club. I do, you know, 5 to 6 shows a week, so very, very busy, as I know Mr. Hanks is as well.
Yep.
What? No, Michael only does 67 shows now.
You know, what's funny is I've actually trimmed it back, and I'm still busy because you got to keep in mind, for me, I've got Middle Theory, which I was actually doing just this evening. I mean, literally leading up until doing this, which is why I haven't gotten anything else done this evening. And Middle Theory is my news and current events. Well, it's not really politics. I was going to say news and current events podcast, but that Freudian slip obviously, I guess, entails a little political discussion. And the reason I do that podcast is A, because I enjoy those subjects, and B, because frankly, I think that people who tune into my primary show, The Graylian Report, you know, they don't always want to hear that kind of content. And which is another cool thing about working with Jim is that, you know, the number of shows that I do are relative to how busy Jim's week is going to be, because half of those shows are going to be the things I do with him, okay? but the other thing to keep in mind is that behind the scenes, and this is what no one will ever know, no one will ever know what Jim and I talk about behind the scenes. And that's what's really cool about all this. And that's why Jim and I are such good friends, because we get to secretly talk about things that nobody hears about on our podcast. And that's where true camaraderie comes into play too, I think. So yeah, not quite 67 podcasts, but as busy as we both are, we still find time to work together. And that's the beauty of this kind of business. So I do enjoy it.
And you got, so besides Middle Theory, you got the Graylian Report. You still doing the Michael Hanks show?
No, that one we had to can because, I'm fairly busy. The truth actually is that, and a lot of people who are longtime listeners of my shows know this, I do travel a lot, both for purposes of going to conferences, which actually now, bless his heart, Jim's getting pulled into a lot of that because Jim's been tagging along to the Paradigm Symposium now 2 years in a row, and he and I are going to be doing it again this year. So, Jim, I'm sorry, you know.
I've enjoyed it. And actually, we even did some music at the Paradigm Symposium. They're like these impromptu jam sessions. So Michael was playing the guitar and singing. It was great.
Well, now, I was playing the guitar and singing, but somebody was singing with me. Jim Harold happens to be quite a singer. For those out there who don't know this. And so, yeah, I think we were doing Beatles songs at like, you know, 12:01 a.m.
Yeah, and they're much higher than I remember them 10 or 15 years ago. They must have raised the key or something.
it was quite good. So, yeah, it's a good time. But, yeah, so that's kind of the situation. Graylian Report, Middle Theory, and then stuff I do with Jim Harold. And
your Graylian X.
Yes, I do have a subscriber area as well. That is true, yes. We had additional content, which is kind of cool because it's hard to find people who do new things with podcasting. And yet that's what podcasting is supposed to be about, is it's not radio. But I was talking with a friend on the telephone earlier, and they said to me, and I swear I'm not trying to just be a complete butt kisser here. That's not what it's about. I really admire Jim, and I admire what he does. And my friend on the telephone brought up to me, they said, I really love ghost stories, and that is why Jim Harold's Campfire is my favorite show. And I had to say, you know, I totally get that, and I know why. Because people love hearing a good story. And so, you know, to try and find a different approach, because I'll be honest, I'm just going to lay it all out there. There are a lot of people, I think, who either have tried to or would love to try and copy Jim's format, it's very difficult to come up with something as unique as, you know, what he's doing with Campfire. With our subscriber content with Graylian X, there's an additional podcast each week, which is very similar to the Graylian Report, but it's commercial free. It's a little bit more full throttle and condensed. Very newsy, but you know, I don't want it to be too newsy. And so there's each month we also do something called Graylian Enigmas that looks at a single subject and in a little bit more of a theatrical kind of way. It's really kind of evoking kind of shades of In Search Of and shows like that, and
right.
and takes almost a storytelling approach to these kind of things, but still with kind of investigative journalism applied to it. And often something that I know Jim and I are going to be talking about a bit together tonight, which is skepticism applied to serious research of this kind of subject.
Yes. And I figured you two were two of the best people I could have to talk about this. Jim and I talked about it a bit last time he was on, and Micah, you know, this is one of your things, is that you approach everything with that skeptical mind. And I think a lot of people, when you mention the paranormal and you say the word skeptic, they immediately think of the debunkers. They think of the James Randis and people like that who throw out everything by default.
Right. And I think that's a mistake, because I think that, you know, I'm probably a little less skeptical than Micah, just a little less, but it's very close. I mean, I think, and Micah and I have talked about this, when we went into this together, I think Micah thought that I might be, you know, the side that kind of, and I don't think you meant it in a negative way, but more the true believer side. And certainly I will say, you know, I have a very soft spot in my heart for my campfire program. And those stories, I believe the people who, you know, they seem very sincere. They're telling things that they believe that happened to them. And I believe they're telling the truth as they believe it to be. So, but that's one thing. But when you look at things like we do on the Paranormal Report with our videos, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there, and you can't just blindly accept it. And I think that, you know, I think if you're too far in one direction, either way, you're probably not, in my opinion, in the best place, whether that be everything is crap and I'm a debunker, or I'm a true believer and everything we see is, as we discussed today, Micah, the Arizona Department of Transportation, those are really Sasquatches. Well, not so much. They were bushes. So I think you have to go in with an even keel, kind of play it down the middle when you're looking at supposed cases and evidence, and try to be intellectually honest about it.
Jim is right, actually. You know, I mean, when he approached me about doing the Paranormal Report, you know, initially I was kind of like, okay, you know, I wonder, you know, if I hope, and it's not about branding. I think that's the problem, is that there's so much culture. Jim and I, another thing we have in common, by the way, is, you know, a history in broadcast, both in actual production of content for live radio and also the marketing component. Because while I was a producer, I know Jim, you know, has a background in the more of the marketing angle of that. But me personally, I actually produced commercial spots, and so I had to work one-on-one with advertisers and also with sales reps who were trying to secure that advertisement. And so you learn a lot about the science of advertising and the people who have managed to do it. Roy Williams, not the coach but the advertiser, you know, people who have managed to employ this for purpose of success in radio broadcast and also in advertising. Now, what does that have to do with the paranormal? Well, you know, I think that, frankly, in the modern skeptical communities, and this is something that we certainly see in advertising, is that there are a lot of people who feel that that culture is the way that you understand what drives people to want to make a purchase, or what makes people, you know, find a show that they like, or a magazine or a comic book or something that just resonates with them. Part of it is finding something they like. The other part is this sense of culture. Oh, I feel like I can be a part of this. This is something that resonates with me. This is something.
A tribe.
Yes, there's very much that sense of a tribe. I think that the modern skeptics kind of have that. And I'm not that kind of a skeptic. By the same token, though, I'm thinking, you know, if I want to try and present myself as some sort of a person who is employing logic and reason, you know, is doing a show where we look at paranormal videos each week going to be the best thing? But, you know, I've always liked Jim regardless. And I think, you know, even if he had been, you know, the far believer side and I'd been a hardened skeptic, we'd still get along. Doing this show together, what I find is that, yeah, like you said, Jim, there is an almost identical thought process applied. It is that, you know, you've got to be realistic about things, but you can't be so closed-minded that you don't allow for the possibility, and you can't be dismissive of people who claim that they've had an experience. For all you know, that experience may be legitimate. It also may be misinterpretation, but by taking time rather than just outwardly dismissing all of this, by taking time to look at these reports and to look at what people are, you know, presenting as paranormal phenomena and trying to understand the possibilities, whether for or against that possibility, I think that you learn a lot not only about human nature but about what, you know, the limitations of our current science and our outlook on nature actually is. And I do believe, as Jim does, that there are a lot of possibilities and a lot of things that we have not yet fully understood.
Yes, sir. I don't mean to monopolize. You made a mistake getting us both on here. Whew. Trying to get a word in edgewise. But the point is, and I've said this many times, there is no doubt in my mind that I believe there is something going on in many, in these different silos, phenomena, whether it's UFOs, whether it's ghosts, a little more skeptical about some cryptozoology like Bigfoot and Sasquatch and so forth, but particularly UFOs, ghosts, life after death, those kind of things. I just think the world is so much more complicated than we in our current science can understand. An example that I use, and my listeners, if they hear this, they'll be sick of it. They've heard it a million times, but I use the example of DNA. Well, we did not know that DNA existed in 1850. Did that make it any less real? It just meant that our science couldn't catch up with it. So many of these things we call paranormal, I do believe exist. There may be scientific explanations for them. There may be spiritual explanations for them. So I don't, in my case, I definitely want to come down the side. I believe there is something to the paranormal. Does that mean that the majority of cases where people think they see a UFO that it actually might be ET? I don't think so. But might there be a smaller percentage, the ones that can't be explained away? Maybe. So I think it's about keeping that intellectually honest but open mind. I do have a bias towards the believer side, but I'm willing to acknowledge it. And sometimes I wish the debunkers, those guys, would be able to say, yeah, I've got a bias too.
Yeah, well, you know, they're debunkers more than they are skeptics. They've kind of hijacked the term skeptic, but really, skeptic is someone who asks questions. Anyone who goes in with an agenda, with a belief system, and will only look at the stuff through that belief system is not a skeptic. They're out to debunk anything that doesn't fit their worldview.
Well, here's my, and Micah knows this, I've used this example many times. You will read an article about a UFO sighting. Let's use UFOs again. And you'll go three or four paragraphs down and they'll say this, you know, Joe Fabitz from Louisville, Kentucky saw this, this, and this, 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 and this. And then they will say, fill in the blank of the skeptic. But many times people can mistake the planet Venus, says right. Ben Radford or whoever it is. And Ben's been on the show, nothing against him, but he's certainly in this category. So they will put a generic objection against a specific case. What I would say is, why not try to investigate the specific case? And if you're going in to shoot holes into it, go into the details of that specific case. It's like a prosecuting attorney not prosecuting that specific case, but just saying, well, sometimes when people get mad at their girlfriends, they kill them. Therefore, this guy whose girlfriend ended up murdered must have killed her, because it happens a lot of times. So that's what bugs me about the, quote, debunkers.
You know, Jim, by the way, we talked about on the audio podcast version of the Paranormal Report this week, a Washington Post article that was talking about what it termed a bizarre ESP test that were conducted on Aboriginal children from Manitoba, Canada, back in the 1930s and 40s. And in the article, what was interesting is that it's talking about the human rights issues and, of course, the injustices, the ethical problems involved with submitting these children to these kinds of experiments. And it actually, at one point, literally links to something that it calls bizarre treatment, but it had nothing to do with ESP experiments that were conducted, I should mention, at the Ryan Research Institute. We actually, looking at this article, see this. And later on in the article, I mentioned that I said to Jim, as we were talking about this on the show, that they quote Michael Shermer, but they don't quote John Kruth, who's the director at Ryan, to get a perspective from him about this. And every time they mention research, they put it in air quotes. They're totally making a case against ESP research, talking about how this is cruel and unusual, when in fact, this research that was done with these children, and granted, the problem was is that, you know, these kids were orphans. There was no parental consent given, and they were basically, warrants of the, you know, or basically they were under the jurisdiction of the state. It was presumed, and so that, of course, in itself constitutes a problem, that these children had no one to speak for them, and the state was allowing these kinds of experiments to be done. ESP experiments, though, at Ryan Institute, involved them trying to guess what was on a card that was being held. The researcher could see what was on the card. The kids couldn't. Whereas there were also what were truly bizarre experiments, you know, including hearing and ocular tests and things that were carried out at the actual schools in Manitoba, Canada, where these children were from. The article quotes Michael Shermer, and I really don't have anything against Michael Shermer. He even had his own strange experience with a clock that had belonged to, I believe, his wife's grandfather that he talked about and received a lot of criticism for, because he said, you know, every now and then, even somebody like me has something that's so uncanny that it causes us to wonder, really, is there more going on in the world than what we can account for with the senses and with science? But Michael Shermer's quoted in the article, and it said, Michael Shermer said, blank, 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 as told to Discovery News. If you click the link, the article from Discovery News was from 2 years ago. That article that was quoted, entirely unrelated to the Washington Post's feature on the ESP research done at Rind, entirely unrelated, did quote John Kruth, director of the Rind Center, the guy who actually took me on a tour of that center a couple of years ago and who I've still been in email contact with a few times since. And so, you know, I'm thinking, what a great way to take an entirely unrelated quote and use that to substantiate a claim against ESP and call it bizarre research carried out against children. And then when they link to anything bizarre, they're talking about something completely removed from the psychic research that didn't even occur in Manitoba at the school where the children actually were. That was down at Duke University in the 1940s. It's bull. It's complete. It's just, it's absurdity. But that's how people treat these kinds of things. They can. It's very easy to write something in such a way that it presents a narrative that is,
sure,
attractive to certain.
But it wasn't always that way. The mainstream media has shifted over the last 60 years. At one point, the mainstream media would treat this subject seriously. I am looking on my screen right now. I was looking up as you were talking because I was thinking about this. April 7th, 1952, Life magazine, probably at the time the biggest periodical in the United States, weekly magazine at the time. And the headline is, "There is a case for interplanetary saucers," and there's a full-length article, April 7th, 1952. And this is actually featured on the NICAP site. My point is that over time, something has shifted. Now, the question becomes, is this the government or something? Or is this, you know, I think there may be an aspect of that in the UFO case. But for example, ghosts, you know, and there are a few, we've spotlighted a few on the programs that play it straight. And even some TV reporters who have said, yeah, we went to this house and I think there might be ghosts there. But even then, the anchors tried to override the field reporters and make a big joke out of it. But the point is what I think has happened, let's set aside the governmental stuff. I think that what has happened in the media is that there is a template. You know, there's a certain way that you cover a murder. There's a certain way that you cover a fire. There is a certain way you cover a political election. And there is a certain way to cover a ghost UFO Bigfoot story, a paranormal story. And you do that by making the person look like a kook. You do it by arching your eyebrows. You do it by putting towards the end of the show is what they call the kicker in the profession. That's the funny story at the end of the show. You do it by playing the X-Files music. And this has become a convention. So as people come in, it's not, well, should we take this seriously? Hey, kid, here's a paranormal story. And since you've been conditioned and been watching how we do this, you know that this is all played for laughs, right? And there I think that's part of it, too.
Jim, it's so funny you beat me to it, because I was going to say every news story you've ever heard about the paranormal. Well, it turns out that the truth's out there after all.
Well, folks in Louisville say they're seeing something strange in the sky, and our Jennifer Johnson's out there. So are there aliens afoot? You know, I could write it in my sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
And you know, from the other side, though, you have the problem with the people, the true believers, I guess you could say. I don't know if that's really the best term, but the people who make those jumps in logic from, hey, I saw lights in the sky, they must have been from another planet.
Right.
And even if it's something anomalous, that still doesn't say it's from another planet.
That's right. And I think that we have to police ourselves to some extent on that end, too. I think that's extremely common. And I think people sometimes see what they want to see.
We make broad assumptions based on, again, some level of conditioning. You know, if you see a UFO, by default, it must be alien. And, you know, the question that someone will ask is, oh, do you believe in aliens or do you think it's all bunk? But there's a lot of other options in between those two.
Well, people say, do you believe in UFOs? And it's like, well, yeah, I absolutely believe in UFOs. And I happen to believe that, you know, throughout history, or at least my post-war history, that a lot of UFOs have been military aircraft of one sort or another. I mean, if you look at a book like I've interviewed Annie Jacobson, who did a really interesting book on Area 51, and actually her theory, I think, is actually wilder than the ET theory, if you've read that book. And I won't spoil it, but it's really strange, but nevertheless, but totally terrestrial. But nevertheless, she talked about a lot of things being mistaken because these planes in the 50s and the 60s flew further and faster than anything anybody knew about. So sure, some of that is to account for it. And who knows? God knows what the government is flying today. So certainly that's some of it. Some of it's heavenly bodies. But there are other reports that are far stranger and can't be explained away so easily. But that doesn't even mean, I think most of them can probably, the majority can be very easily explained or very logically explained without resorting to the ET option. But that doesn't preclude the ET option.
Right, exactly. Micah?
Well, I mean, Soraya, we've talked about this so many times. I mean, I could just tell you everything that everybody probably already knows that I think. But I mean, I'll frame it like this. You know, I had, and I know Jim and I have both recently interviewed Stephen Bassett independently, not on our show that we've been doing together, but independently on our separate shows. And, you know, it would be very interesting to compare those two interviews, I think, because a lot of people, you know, have it out for Stephen Bassett. I have personally met him on two occasions, and I found him to be very nice both times, and it was good having him on the show, too. Now, I asked him, what do we do with the possibility that there are UFO reports that don't involve extraterrestrials? And his response to that was, look, forget about that. That's not what we're talking about. When we're talking about ending this truth embargo, which, of course, what he's talking about is the broader conspiracy that many assert is involved with the cover-up of UFO information by government agencies. He says, when we're talking about ending this truth embargo, we are talking specifically about the extraterrestrial presidency. Yes, we. Yeah,
I knew it all along. They're all aliens. They're all aliens.
Yeah, blue blooded. When they said they were blue blooded, they meant really. They're blue blooded. They're aliens. No, yeah, the extraterrestrial presence in our midst. And you know, I don't think that I have seen evidence that, to my satisfaction, proves an extraterrestrial presence resides among us. You know, that's just me. I think that that there is certainly a UFO phenomenon, and I think that to mirror what both you guys have said, and you know, Soraya, as you were just kind of getting at, that there are so many different things that kind of comprise what we're talking about. Yeah. You know, again, if we look at this historically, what we know is that immediately after the Second World War, there were reports, very credible reports, including, you know, in my book Ghost Rockets, I talk about a 1946 Captain Jack Puckett. I always come back to this case because I think of the context that it puts things for us. Puckett, it was the summer of 46, and he was, you know, I think he was the chief of, I believe he was the chief of Tactical Air Command. He was flying to MacDill Air Force Base in Florida, and I believe it was early in the morning, he and his crew observed some sort of an object that appeared to be like a large B-52 fuselage without wings. Two rows of illuminated portholes or windows on this object, and there was a large contrail, like a jet being produced by this, that was reddish in color, the exhaust that it produced. And this object was moving at extreme speed, I think, at least for, you know, that time period. They said that this thing might have been nearing 1,000 miles an hour, based on their estimates about this craft and as it flew by them. But the reason that I find this interesting is because Puckett, if memory serves, I believe that he actually had sworn in a statement with an affidavit that this is what he had seen, and he gave, to the best of his ability, a clear and accurate description of what he saw. Right after the end of the Second World War, you know, for a person, a military officer, to have sworn in a statement like this that they had seen what appeared to be a highly exotic aircraft that maybe, for all we know, damn near collided with his aircraft as he was flying, for him to describe something like this, there are a number of different interpretations we might bring, but the most logical would be that he had seen something that appeared unlike any aircraft that he was familiar with at that time, and that he reported this because of his concern that this might have been some sort of for all we know, an enemy technology. Now, some have probably made the case, and I guess that we could do the same here, that that could have been, that entire story could have been fabricated, and fabricated in a way that would have been conducive to governments putting forth what seemed to be an extremely reliable narrative that involved exotic aircraft. And that information, for purposes of psychological warfare, could have been released publicly so that, for instance, world leaders the likes of Joseph Stalin might have been privy to it, and they could have, of course, interpreted that as, well, okay, somebody's got some big guns. They're carrying a much bigger stick than we are. This has been a case, I think, that has been made you know, by a number of researchers. I kind of hint at it in my own book. There have been others just as well who have touched on this idea. And, you know, however you want to look at it, yeah, there's definitely a psychological warfare, you know, a psyops kind of a component in regard to UFOs, in that information at times maybe could be fabricated for purposes of, you know, construing a narrative that is going to be helpful for us on the heels of wartime, and more importantly, as we're entering what became, of course, famously the Cold War. But I don't know that all UFO cases, and we certainly can't say that what Jack Puckett claimed that he saw was such a fabrication for purposes of misleading enemies of the United States. I'm not saying that I think that that's what it is, but I'm saying that that case maybe historically could be interpreted as being such.
Right.
But, you know, we can't prove that. And I would like to think that if there's a sworn statement by an individual who claims in an affidavit that they had seen something like this, whether it be a person who saw a UFO or William Rowe, who had an affidavit signed about a, what, a, you know, again, by all intents and purposes, was a Bigfoot that he had seen in the mid-1950s on Micah Mountain in Washington State, whatever the case may be, when people swear to something that they've seen and they try to give as detailed an explanation or a description as they can, you know, how can you view that as being, well, it's probably all made up, or it's all just, you know, misdirection, or it's all this or that? Sometimes some of these cases do seem to point at something a little deeper.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Now a case that I will bring up, and I brought it up quite a few times on my show, is somebody that I know personally, and I'll try to run through this quickly. A few years back, I was interviewing Robert Hastings. He's done a lot of work on UFOs and nukes with people like Robert Salas and so forth, and then been at the National Press Club. And I was interviewing Hastings, and he started to tell this story about this Air Force officer in Big Sur, California, who was tasked with filming a missile test back in the early 1960s. And he proceeded to tell this story of this missile that was launched. And as it was launched, this film officer, I believe it was Air Force. It would have been Air Force. And he literally saw something come up to the missile, inject it with a beam, go around about 90 degrees, inject it with another beam, do that two more times, and then, and I hope that I'm recounting this correctly, and then the missile disintegrated. And they got this on film. And the strange thing was, and this was probably around 2010, 2011, I didn't say anything during the interview, but that resonated with me, because that very same story was told to me by my broadcasting professor mentor, Dr. Bob Jacobs, who happened to be that film officer. who basically taught me how to do what I'm doing right now. And coincidentally, I ended up getting this line of work because I've always been fascinated with these kind of subjects. And that being said, it's a couple of things. One, to me, you know, his point was, you know, who had that kind of technology at that time to shoot down a missile with a missile, which, you know, some people would argue the military still trying to master. Secondly, he tells a story where, you know, I don't know if it was the next day or a couple of days after, he's brought into a room and basically told by some uniformed people, I think his commanding officer, I believe, I don't want to misstate it, and also some people in dark suits, this didn't happen, or, you know, this didn't happen, you don't know anything about this, and don't talk to anybody about it. And there are sworn affidavits and everything. Well, anyway, so I talked to Hastings. I said, would this happen to be Dr. Bob Jacobs? He said, absolutely. And I said, that's my old professor. And I heard this story in probably about 1990 or 1991, and he was standing 3 feet from me. So I know this is a guy, a PhD, a guy I trust. He has no reason to lie. Subsequently, he had been on Larry King, had a big with Stanton Friedman, had a big blowout with Bill Nye the Science Guy, who is one of those debunkers. And I really recommend, and we may have talked about this last time, I really recommend that people Google Bob Jacobs on YouTube. He's been on my show a couple of times and talked about this. And look at that, because it's very instructive how the debunkers treat witnesses, and not just, you know, willy-nilly people off the street. It was him, Bob Salas, who was a distinguished officer in the Air Force and had the Maelstrom Air Force Base case in, I think, 67. Stanton Friedman was there, and Robert Hastings. And Larry King kind of took umbrage at Nye, I think, at some extent, because I think he felt that, I mean, say what you want about Larry King, but I always thought he played it pretty straight down the middle with these things. And more people like him, I think, are needed in the mainstream media. Even if you want to joke about him and his suspenders or whatever, he always, I think, played it pretty fair and pretty straight with these kind of topics.
True, true. And the thing is, like I said, when you get debunkers like that, the thing is, you know, they represent science in their mind, but it's a very closed-minded view of science. It's a very limited, you know, nothing can exist outside of what we believe currently.
Well, there's a good point on that, and I'm trying to make it brief because I'm not trying to steamroll everybody here, but I interviewed Michael Shermer in 2011, and I give him credit for coming on my show, because the show called The Paranormal Podcast, and you're going to go on it, so I really do, and he was a nice guy. I had no problem with him, but I said, well, Dr. Shermer, look, we probably agree in most cases. Maybe I'll say 90% of it is just goodwill people mistaking something for something it isn't. And then we've got, unfortunately, we've got hoaxers. We know there are hoaxers out there, definitely, and pox upon their house. And then we have people with mental issues. Let's face it, that's a part of the picture, too. Sure. But there's a small amount, and the Jacobs case is the perfect one, distinguished person, smart person, observant person, trained person, who see things that can't be explained, whether it's in the UFO realm, whether it's in the ghost realm, whatever it might be, credible people. And I said, what about that small percentage of cases? And this is kind of like the opposite of what you were saying, Mike, about Bassett was saying, well, we just ignore the other stuff. What Shermer basically said, well, we know those exist, but we put those on the shelf. It's like, what? What? Those are the ones you take down and you look at. Now, Dr. Shermer, hey, he was a good guy for coming on his show. He's a gentleman to me. Nothing personal, but I don't know why we don't look at that those ones that are up on the shelf, especially when they admit, and he is one of the leaders of the movement, him and Randy, when they admit that they're there.
Sure, sure. And that's part of the problem right there. But again, when you look at the other side, that dichotomy between them, that gulf between them is... It seems like it's just getting bigger as time goes on, because you'll have the believers, some of the really extreme believers who believe everything that's out there, who think the government is run by aliens and so on and so forth. And that just adds fuel to the debunking skeptical side, who are like, look at this. This is ridiculous. Why would anyone even think that? Because they're making so many jumps in logic, and it leaves out all the stuff in the middle that's a little more grounded, a little more rational, you know, things like, I don't know, the Grailian Report, you know, the Paranormal Podcast, or this show that doesn't jump from one extreme to the other, but tries to actually follow what's actually there.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, this just in, guys, because when breaking news happens, we talk about it here. This, according to WNEP.com, only 6 hours old, brace yourselves, gentlemen. The truth is now out there. Secret UFO sightings released by Air Force. Anybody else got a problem with that headline? I mean, I don't know. Maybe the fact that the Blue Book files have been available for years already.
Yeah.
And yet again, you know, the biggest problem is that it's the most unoriginal headline award we get. Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, great.
Is there something going on?
One more
Micah Hanks reports.
One more X-Files joke, please. Yeah, and let's go ahead and just misreport the fact that, oh, yeah, like newly released. I tell you, though, if there's one good thing about this, you know, John Greenwald over there at the Black Vault, he's getting a lot of attention, which I think is well-deserved. He's been working a long time. Yeah. And, you know, these searchable Project Blue Book documents. I've been saying for years, though, well before this, you know, this latest media frenzy around Project Blue Book. And of course, the files have been available online in PDF form for a long time. I think it's Blue Book. Bluebookarchive.org, I believe, is one of the websites. There's a couple of them that have actually had those available for browsing, and I've browsed many of them in the past. But the thing is I've thought for a while, you know, with the availability of those files, somebody should do one of these, the top 10 best Blue Book reports. And today in the Graylian Daily News, somebody beat me to it. Yes, indeed. There was the five best cases from the Project Blue Book files. So, but I encourage people to go look at them, you know, because if anything, maybe the more important point here is not the fact that the media is misreporting the fact that Blue Book files have been newly released. They've been available for a long time. Glad that a few people, IO9, amended that and pointed that out at their website, and I give them kudos for doing so. New York Daily News certainly didn't, and there are plenty of others who have just, you know, completely just gone right over that point because apparently that's not important to factually report things. But maybe the other important thing, apart from Greenwald getting some attention for his work there with the Black Vault, is also to point out just general awareness, because a lot of people probably, if they were interested in this, didn't even know that Blue Book files were available for perusal. And so if you'd like to actually see what kinds of documentation throughout the 1950s and 60s the U.S. Air Force was collecting on UFOs, go check them out. They're available at the Black Vault. And, you know, again, it's I think, a great way for people to educate themselves about these things. But again, yet again, the media does tend to play this stuff down. Jim and I, again, on the show this past week that he and I do together, we talked about a little bit about the fact that the New York Daily News kind of played down the Blue Book files and had tried to explain it all away. As you know, now you can look at all the different debunkings, misidentifications, hoaxes, all this sort of stuff that comprises UFO research for the last half century or so. When in fact, the Condon Committee, overseen by Edward U. Condon back in, I believe, 1968, that was by many, according to their jurisdictions, the death knell for ufology and it being taken seriously. I don't know that that's necessarily the case, but even the Condon Committee could not explain some of the cases, which just because they couldn't explain it, that does not mean, of course, that it is something that is infallible proof of ETs. But I do want to say that not everything was pointed at, or fingered, I guess is the term that people like to use in the media these days. Not everything was fingered as a hoax. That sounds a little nasty, so I'm not going to say that.
Oh, that's not good. But the thing is that, and we were talking about this, Micah, just think of something, and let's take the paranormal off the table here and just say, you know, something in your neighborhood, and you read an account in the newspaper, and how many times you read that account and you go, well, that's not exactly right. They got the street wrong, or they got this little nuance wrong, or this guy's not actually the owner. His dad is the... So I think that there tends to be, you know, maybe not for people like Micah, myself, and you, Soraya, people who have been trained in media and so forth and had experience with it. But we have to remember that these people in the media are not all-knowing. They're not all-seeing. They make plenty of mistakes, and I make mistakes. Sure. I'll be the first one to own up to it. But I think there's this kind of reputation that people give me. Oh, if it's on TV, or if it's on the Huffington Post, or if it's on whatever, it must be true. And that is the word. And just think, and the next time your listeners think that, think about the last news story that you read, that you had personal firsthand knowledge of, and you saw a factual error. And I bet everybody can think of those. So just think about that. They're reporting these things 2-3 generations down the line. How much of the story do they really have straight, or how much is just following the template?
Yeah, and how much of it do they throw together in 5 minutes just to get a story out
there?
That's right. Also, with the Blue Book thing, I would highly recommend, if people are interested in learning more about it, to read Jacques Vallée's Forbidden Science, the first volume of his journals, because he was right there through a lot of that, and his anger and frustration of that whole situation shows through very, very clearly.
Well, I think that it makes sense. I think it makes sense to go back and do the reading if you're interested in these sorts of things, because I don't think you're going to get it out of the mainstream media.
No, no. But, I mean, he had more of a personal in on that. He was working on Project
Sure.
Blue Book, and Hynek was, you know, one of his close friends. And he saw how this stuff was actually being handled. And it puts a very different view on it than I had seen anywhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of Vallée, I was going through some of my – I have a pretty extensive 14 – actually, not just 14. I've got a pretty extensive library, period. And I literally was purchasing new shelving just to be able to get some of my books out of storage and up on the walls. And I've got about as much space – but for books in my home as I do time in my schedule. Right? You know, somehow I've managed to get an entirely new shelf space up. And I was going through a couple of my my little treasures, and at the bottom of a box I actually found, without a dust cover, an old hardcover copy of Vallée's Anatomy of a Phenomenon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. What an incredible find. Along with, actually, I should say, I have here on my desk as well, a copy of Willie Lay's famous exotic zoology book. And these were given to me by my good friend, Patrick Green, who is an actor and a filmmaker and also a guy who has at least a part-time interest in cryptozoology. He passed these along to me years ago. They were at the bottom of a box that I'd forgotten he'd given me, and here they are. And I do think that there have been a lot of people lately who've been arguing and saying, you know, okay, great, Blue Book files released. You're not going to learn anything new about UFOs from reading old documents. And I would argue, yes, maybe you would, because there are two points that should be pointed out here. A lot of the people who are arguing and naysaying about that probably haven't read the old information. They're probably not as familiar with the old data and the old literature as they would like people to think that they are. And the second point is that with the accumulation of knowledge through science and the proper application of the scientific method that has, you know, occurred since the end of the Blue Book era, And really not just in relation to UFOs, but in relation to all branches of science, there is a lot more data available to us today. Computer science, of course, and information science, but also knowledge of atmospheric phenomena, geological phenomena. This is a big thing that in 2014, 2014 really kind of became the year for earthquake lights, thanks to this paper that Robert Theriault and John Deere co-authored with a couple of other individuals. You know, we have such vast knowledge available to us. The picture's not complete, but we've got a lot more than we had in 1953 when Ruppelt and the guys were heading off the Blue Book files, and they were trying to scientifically approach and understand what appeared to be some exotic phenomena seen in our skies. They didn't approach it beginning saying, okay, well, it looks like aliens have landed, let's see what we can do about this. They said, okay. You know, if anything, it was a strategic and a military concern in relation to the national security threat that we may face if there was some exotic technology or seemingly exotic technology that was being piloted by some other world power. I mean, this would be a direct threat to the United States if somebody, again, was waving a bigger stick than we were. This is the reason why the U.S. Air Force and other agencies were taking interest in the UFO phenomena. And I don't think that it can so easily be said that every instance was something that was fabricated just to mislead the enemy. I think it's quite clear that there were things being seen by civilians and things being seen, also by military officials who were just as perplexed by what they were seeing and reporting on. So, you know, the broader narrative here is that, you know, we've got a long history of things, but I think that with the application of modern science and understanding, we might be able to make some new determinations about old phenomena, as well as the application of, military knowledge and official information that's being released, as we've seen this past year also with the CIA. But go ahead.
I think we should also make clear that Project Blue Book did not at any point say that UFOs or anything of that ilk didn't exist. They came to the conclusion that they were not a threat to national security.
The Air Force's purpose was to do just that. They were intending to try and discern. Of course, it would be preferable, I think, to be able to identify the phenomena. But, you know, again, the Air Force, not being a scientific body, they had scientific advisors just like J. Allen Hynek. Their intention was to try and estimate the threat. But now, previous estimates of the situation, I believe with Grudge and Sign and the like, these were essentially different government panels and groups that preceded Project Blue Book. There had been the famous estimate of the situation, which had determined that in likelihood, a plausible explanation was that extraterrestrial technologies could account for some of these. And that is an idea that has been taken and run with for years and years and years. But I think we have to take into consideration that the fact that a government agency would come out and say, okay, it looks like we may be dealing with an extraterrestrial visitation here. These technologies, whatever they are so far beyond what we know to exist, we couldn't account for them in any other way. That alone does not prove that ETs exist. And I think that that's where that is one shortcoming of modern ufology, is that they look back at literature like that and say, look, as far back as before Blue Book, they were saying aliens were visiting. Well, no, they weren't. They were open to that possibility in searching for an explanation for what was apparently an unexplained phenomenon.
Yeah.
And the thing that gets me when people say, well, it's just kooks interested in this. I can name three presidents off of the top of my tongue who had you know, who had an interest in this. Clinton, who we've talked about this, Micah, tried to get the information apparently and has spoken in public, like recently on the Jimmy Kimmel show. And some people think that he was hiding something when he was saying that. Jimmy Carter had his own experience, as did, I believe, Ronald Reagan, I believe, when he was governor of California. And the famous speech at the United Nations, something to the effect that the nations of the world might come together if there were some kind of extraterrestrial threat. Well, where the hell did that come from? You know, I mean, so you you kind of wonder if he knew something. But the point being, I think extremely intelligent people can be interested. And you were talking about Valet, and one of the beauties right now in this internet age, you know, I have on my table in the other room the little Wonder, the Kindle, which can hold, you know, 1,000 books or whatever. You know, I'm looking right here. I can see 5 or 6. And this is like legitimately available, 5 or 6 books from Jacques Vallée that you can have in seconds if you have a Kindle or a Kindle app. So, I mean, the information is much more accessible, I think, than it's ever been. So, you know, if you're really interested in this, and the same goes for the ghost phenomena. I don't know if he publicized it since, but Lloyd Auerbach at one point, the famous paranormal parapsychologist and a really interesting guy, sent out this email to me that gave me all this information about all of these books going back to the I think the late 1800s about spiritualism and all these different topics. So, you know, the information is certainly out there, whether it's through Kindle or the internet itself. And some of these original sources are available where you might have had to go to a bunch of used bookstores to find a worn copy. Now you can have it on your Kindle in just a few seconds. So the information, I think, is there if people are willing to dig for it.
The and we've been you know, focusing on UFOs. I think it's just at this point, I would say it's Micah and I's default to end up talking about UFOs.
Hey, Micah is the UFO guy. I always try to kick in some of the ghost stuff.
Soraya, we can change that. Watch this.
Yeah.
Let's talk about ghosts.
What I'm saying, though, is that, like, you can apply the same thing to pretty much any field, whether it be ghosts, cryptozoology, or whatever. I think people who believe need to learn what is a conclusion they're jumping to versus what the facts actually show. For instance, EVPs, if we're going to deal with ghosts.
Right.
You get an EVP. Okay, well, there's an anomalous voice on your recorder. Does that prove that it's a dead person talking to you? Well, no.
Yeah.
All you can say is you have an anomalous voice on that recorder. We can't say where it came from, who made it, you know, so on and so forth. We can guess, we can speculate, you know, if it's an intelligent response, like if you said, is this Peter? And it said, yes, this is Peter. Okay, but they don't usually say that.
Right. And I think that you've got to keep in things electrical despair. And this is one of my big kicks with things like EMF meters. You know, you're going into these old houses that have, you know, electrical systems from 1935, and right. You're having your EMF meter spike. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you got to, again, my old standby is keep an open mind, but not so open your brains fall out. And some of this is just common sense.
Yep. And there's some things that simply don't have good explanations. If, you know, when someone tells you a story and you sit there and you think about it, you go, okay, yeah, I don't really have a good explanation for what could have caused that. It doesn't mean they didn't misinterpret it or misremember it. But if they didn't, it, you know, I mean, there are some things in this world we simply don't understand yet.
Oh, yeah, I believe that. And I believe, now see, here's where I get woo-woo a little bit. You know, when people tell me that they have premonitions of loved ones dying or they feel there's an after death of communication, I happen to think that there's something to that. I think there's some kind of golden thread between spiritual golden thread between people who are close. And I just happen to believe that. I also believe in life after death. And that's certainly probably not going to gain me many fans in the quote scientific community. So I think there's also a place for spirituality in some of this, but that doesn't mean that we have to believe in each and everything that comes down the pike.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you also have the scientific community occasionally ignoring evidence that supports things like life after death.
Oh, yeah. Well, the old saw is, you know, the near-death experiences. I mean, how many thousands of people have come through with very, very similar kind of stories And they just say, well, it's the physiology of a dying brain. And maybe it is. But it seems a little dismissive because when you overlay some of the other things that happened to these people, it seems like, well, how would that explain that? Like somebody, somebody seeing somebody who has died, but they didn't know they died, and they report back, they saw them, and then they find out they died. Things like that, that I don't see the scientific, I don't see how you can explain something like that away. So, but yes, I agree. They tend to throw it out all and justify it all and say it's all just the throes of a dying brain.
And nor can we scientifically prove that it's the throes of a dying brain, but that's okay because it fits the expected dogma.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. What he said.
Well, the thing is that, I don't even expect the skeptics to come as far on the side that I am, because I'm probably a little more woo-woo than Micah is. But at least if they try to meet us part way, I think if we get people like me and people like Mike and people like you, Soraya, and maybe some people who are on the skeptical edge but are willing to listen a little bit, if we can get those people, I don't know if we ever will, because people tend, you get three people in the room and somebody ends up murdered. You know, it's hard for two or three people to get along. Can we ever marry these? And I don't think we'll ever do it on a mass level, but at least hopefully we get some discussion between people of like somewhat like minds, and at least have some civil discussion about it.
Well, to me, it's all about whatever's actually there. I find it fascinating, but I'm not willing to believe something just because I want to believe it. I want to see why, if there are, I believe there's anomalous UFOs. I don't know what they are. And Micah, you've made a good point before where you say things, people throw out interdimensional, but we don't even know what that term means.
Yeah, exactly. It's a concept right now.
Yeah, so I mean, it's no better than saying they're extraterrestrial, because we don't know if there's extraterrestrial life. We don't know if there's interdimensional life. So these are just more terms, more labels to throw on something we don't understand. But there's clearly a phenomena out there that something that people are seeing, that may be a number of different things that we don't have a good explanation for at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
That doesn't mean we should throw it out.
No, not at all. No, I don't think that the answer to, we don't have the answer yet, is... well, therefore, it must not be. I think that Descartes and some of the philosophers of old would be rolling over in their graves if they knew that not only are modern scientists saying that philosophy is dead, but also that if we don't have evidence to support it, then it cannot be. Granted, for something to be recognized as scientific law, yeah, there has to be good evidence. There has to be physical evidence. But by the same token, give me evidence of human consciousness aside from the apparent perspective, which is entirely human, that we are aware and that we are cognizant of what's happening. Yeah. Now, again, in the Cartesian sense of things, I think, therefore I am, and therefore we are. I am you, and you are me, and we are he, and he is altogether, or whatever it was, right? Some alien probably said that at some point, or something similar to one. But
I am he is, you are his, we are his, and we're all together. No, that was somebody else, sorry.
Exactly. Yes. One day we will strive, and through science we will get those lyrics right, all of us. But in the meantime, I've got here in my hands my paperback songs edition of the Beatles Pocket Reference Guide. Yes, all their classics. So I could look it up, but I think
that's okay.
Yeah. The broader question, however, is, how do we determine really what is, when everything is filtered through the human senses?
Yes.
And what do we do with, and how do we deal with things that fall outside the jurisdictions of those things sensory to us? And even what we can observe with science still is interpreted through the senses. And even what we recognize as the senses, those things are governed by the psychological processes and the neurobiology, all of these kind of things that literally oversee all functions of all that we call perceptible. We can't prove what consciousness is or if it exists. Consciousness, soul, mind, all of these kinds of things, and frankly, materiality to an extent, are all things.
I was going to say that.
And the thing is that I think that Micah, the gentleman along with you who masterminded the Paradigm Symposium, Scotty Roberts, had one of the best posts I've ever seen about this. This was on Facebook the other day, and he said, he had a photo and he had a graphic by him, very nicely done. He's a great artist. It said, the more S I know, and you can fill in the blanks, the more I know I don't know S. And yep. I think that there's a certain amount of truth to it. And some of this, I think, is undiscoverable. At least, you know, we may someday progress and figure out what happens life after death. Maybe disclosure will happen if you're in that camp that believes a contact's already been made. Or maybe the aliens will make themselves known to the broad public and land on the White House lawn. But I'm not sure that it's going to happen in my lifetime. But it is a lot of fun to ask the questions. But I, for one, never think, I know all the answers, because I really don't. In fact, you know, I came into this 10 years ago, always interested, but really more seriously 10 years ago, thinking, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to do these shows. I'm going to figure all this stuff out, talk to these great thinkers. And the truth is, I'm more confused than ever.
Right.
Good for you.
And in talking about UFOs, and I know you had him on, you had Whitley Strieber on, and Strieber's been saying for a while that whatever the UFO phenomena is, whatever the visitor phenomena is, which I'm not convinced that lights in the sky are necessarily the same thing right. that the abduction scenario is, but he mentioned that it has something to do with death.
Yeah, that's what he said on my show, which I still don't know what he meant by that. But what I think overall, what I will say, though, is that when I got into this, and even as a kid, and somebody mentioned, or Micah mentioned In Search Of earlier, and that's really the show that kind of got me into this whole thing when I was like 6 years old. And I wish somebody would do a new version of that, but do it well. But anyway... Yeah. The point is that I think I always looked at this stuff as very siloed, you know, UFOs here, ghosts here, this here, mm-hmm. that here. And then I'm starting to wonder now, possibly, I'm not saying it's the case, somehow some of these different paranormal categories intermingle and they're somehow mixed into a big melange.
Well, if you look at the Omega Project, which was Kenneth Ring's work, his second book on, well, he did one on near-death experiences, and then someone gave him communion and told him, read this. And he said, I don't do UFOs. I just do near-death, you know, near-death stuff. Right. And his publisher said, no, read this. So he sat down and read it and realized that some of the after effects that people experience who had abduction accounts are very similar to some of the after effects of near-death experiences. And when I first read the book, it actually hurt my brain to some degree because I had them so siloed right. off. It's like, no, how can this be? How can the people, you know, it's even though the experiences are somewhat different, the after effects on the people were so similar, it almost suggests that a similar phenomena had occurred. Looking at it now, I'd say they both, they're both affecting some kind of altered state of consciousness or a, you know, not a normal state of consciousness, and that might be where the connecting factor is. Strieber... you know, had so many cases that people wrote him where they saw people who had passed away with the visitors, as he calls them, because he doesn't call them aliens. Right. And that's why he felt that there was some connection to death, because people who had passed away would appear in these abduction accounts, even when people didn't realize they had passed away. So kind of like the near-death experience again.
Hmm. Yeah, it does boggle the mind. It's really a mind bender, all of this stuff. And I just, Micah has done hundreds of hours of this. I've done hundreds of hours of this, and it just, but it keeps you going. I mean, I'm always interested in this. People say, well, how can you do this, do all these shows? I'm still interested, and sometimes I find myself when I'm interviewing somebody, I actually start listening to the show like I'm listening to it, and it's like, wait, uh-huh. wait a minute. Wait, I'm doing this show. I gotta figure out the next question.
I have that problem all the time.
Well, goodness, I tell you. And the only thing I can add really there is, you know, Whitley Strieber, I wrote in my own book, The UFO Singularity, you know, I think he's one of the most eloquent speakers on this. And I said in that book, you know, whatever you may think of Whitley and his ideas, you know, suspend your disbelief, listen to what he has to say. There was nothing probably more humbling than going as a guest on his show and him asking me, Micah, what did you mean when you said that? You know, and
wow.
Yeah, but you know, it was a wonderful conversation, and you know, that was the first and the last time I spoke to Whitley. You know, he's a busy guy, and I haven't, you know, stayed in touch with him, but that was it was a wonderful experience being able to talk to somebody who is brave enough to put his own life out there, and whatever you may think of his interpretation, he has tried to present his experiences and his attempts at reckoning with it with as much elegance and grace, I think, as any human could. And, you know, I've always admired him for that.
And he's always been skeptical.
Yeah, he's skeptical of his own experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
There's been times where Whitley has, you know, tried to say that, you know, maybe this entire thing comes from within the mind, you know. And his, even though it was the very first book on that subject that he had written, Communion has, and I maintain, you know, still possesses some of the most eloquent intellectual ponderings on the so-called alien abduction phenomena. It's one of the only books that I really recommend to people. Although I think that there are others. When I say that one of the only books I really recommend to people, I say on the abduction phenomena. But again, there are plenty, and that's a whole different discussion that we'll have to have some other time, I think. Because, I mean, I don't want to be dismissive of the abduction phenomena. I have a lot of friends in the abduction community, and whatever the circumstances may be, I think two things, and that is that these people aren't all lying, and that whatever it is probably isn't what it seems.
I would agree with that. I would agree 100%. Like I said, I don't necessarily know that there's a direct connection between lights in the sky and abduction accounts, because you see so many abduction accounts that have nothing to do with lights in the sky.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Yeah, Kool-Aid with fruit juice added equals Thursday. that's sort of like something that our buddy Tom Fusco said, Jim, up at Paradigm Symposium.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
I know what you're talking about. I don't know exactly what you, but I remember something like that, yes.
Well, again, you know, the thing is that people presume that, oh, well, somebody thinks that they were taken on board a spaceship. We see flying saucers. We see UFOs and things flying around. The aliens must be coming, and they're abducting us. Why are they doing that? It's got to be for experimentation, you know? And we don't realize how much we anthropomorphize our expectations. It's really, mm-hmm. It gets to a point where it's damn near wish fulfillment, you know? And therefore, just because flying saucer is seen flying through sky, people claim to have non-human encounters, you know, therefore aliens. That's not necessarily the best way to approach this scientifically.
We need to stop making that jump and actually look at what's actually there.
That's right.
I agree. And hopefully all of us in our own little way can do that.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if it's UFOs, ghosts, or whatever. Stop making the assumption based on assumptions people have made in the past.
That's right. I don't believe in any of it.
I knew it all along.
All right. Well, I thank you guys. Where's the best place to find you guys on the internet?
Well, Mr. Hanks, I'll let you go first.
Oh, well, okay. I guess they're selling popsicle sticks in Hades. No, I'm kidding. I tell you,
it has officially frozen over.
No, it's so cool to be able to do this with Jim. I really like working with him, and this is certainly a man of like mind to me, and you know, folks can certainly expect a lot more. The first place to look for the both of us is, of course, the Paranormal Report. We've got audio podcasts that are going to be going out. Why audio podcasts when we've been doing a video show together for not all that long. I mean, I'm a newcomer. He and Clayton Morris before me, you know, had been doing it for quite a while. And there are more than 120 episodes of the Paranormal Report available online for your viewing. But we've added a podcast to this just as well this week, because we know how many people like to be able to have something they can be listening to while they're working. A lot of people email us and say, look, you know, my work day goes by because I listen to your shows. You know, that's a great way to pass the time. So we're offering an audio podcast that people don't have to be sitting in front of a computer to be able to enjoy. And then throughout the week, we're also offering shorter, more to the point video analysis segments that are the more traditional format of the Paranormal Report, but again, in shorter sound bites so that you can enjoy those throughout the week and you don't have to carve out, you know, 30, 45 minutes, you know, in your schedule to be able to enjoy this. Now, we think, Jim and I, that this is going to be something that people are really going to enjoy a lot more, and it's going to make it more accessible. Really, you're actually getting a little bit more than you would beforehand, and so that's the Paranormal Report. You can find that at both my website, thegraylianreport.com, and Jim's website. And before I toss it over to Jim, I'll just say that while you're at graylianreport.com, you know, there is the primary podcast there, as well as the subscriber area, Graylian X. You'll see a big button right there that you can use to subscribe if you're interested in what you hear. But check out those podcasts, and definitely head on over to Jim Harrell's website just as well.
Yeah, the Paranormal Report, I should say, is also on YouTube. The video segments are on YouTube. And also you can find it on iTunes or other podcatching apps. I know a lot of people are listening these days with their phones. So just look up the Paranormal Report in your podcatcher of choice. Should be able to find it. And at jimherold.com. Also, jimherold.com, you'll get the two free podcasts, the Paranormal Podcast and The Campfire. And then if you listen to those and listen to those first, but it, then if you really dig it and you say, maybe, you know, this Jim guy, somehow, I don't really like him, but I like his shows. I like his guests. Then go over to jimherold.net and check out the other 10 podcasts I put out a month, which are the subscriber podcasts and online webinars and forums and virtual meet and greets and all the stuff we do over there. But I always direct people first to jimherold.com. Hey, get all the free stuff you can take, and if you like it, then you can graduate from there. And certainly, as Mike has said, it's been a real joy working with him. It's been great. I'm looking forward to what's coming for the Paranormal Report. So hopefully people will check that out if they enjoyed tonight's show.
And with that, we bring to a close the second year of Where Did the Road Go? Next week, I'm going to have Peter Robbins in studio, maybe with a special guest. We shall see how that goes. And that will be starting off our third year. And as I said, new website, go check it out, wheredidtheroadgo.com. You can subscribe to not only the shows now, but also the upcoming guests, so you can get notified whenever there are new guests by subscribing to the RSS feeds. And I have it on, there's RSS feeds on a few other things as well, and more will be added soon, but the majority of the stuff is there. There'll be more links and events added in, and hopefully it'll be a place you can go to find out what conventions, what talks, what stuff is coming up. If I can get enough people continually giving me the information, it will be, I'm hoping, a fairly comprehensive list on the website. So, all right. That's it from me this week. Gonna take you out with some Psyche Corporation. This is Worrying World.
Come in. Do you read me? Do you understand the numbers pouring over your connection? Singing, soaking into our transmission. 21, 34, 55, 89, 144. Whence came this dream that haunts my mind? Behind a curtain, outside of time. Can you hear the knowledge plays, the whirring of the world? Of the universe, venture calls and Tatriot, chambers number 1597, and counting.